forth proposals in appropriate agencies of government and to encourage them to do so. This is the same line you've had for the last decade. You know, yeah, we don't have enough emergency shelter. Yeah, I'm willing to look at anything. Oh, well, people... Oh, really? You haven't said this for the last decade?
No, my position has been that we need more, and I said this over and over again for about a decade, actually for two decades now, that we need more indoor shelter, we need more summer shelter and so forth. The idea that I would be willing to entertain an outdoor shelter if someone can propose a place that might work is totally new. It's about a year old now or something that I've been making, you know, saying that to people. I have gone out to people. I've gone out to the directors of various homeless programs that might come forward with it, to people that run general social programs. And you've been there, Robert, when I've said it in council meetings and I've said it over the air on your program and number of different forums, that I would be willing to entertain such a program, and waiting for somebody to come forward with it. And as you know, I was one of the people that supported the idea of people sleeping in the parks, which the state park system shot down out of a bunch of bigotry, which we probably share a view about that decision in terms of how it was made. And I think I am putting forward something that's different than what I've said in the past, and I'm waiting for someone to come forward with a realistic proposal. And let me say again, it's not enough just to say, which I'm sure you could do, let them sleep in the Poganip, or let them, let the homeless sleep wherever it would be, in a city, particular city park, or in a particular piece of industrial street or something. And that doesn't answer the kinds of questions that I would ask of any social program that comes forward. But that doesn't mean that somebody can't make that kind of a serious proposal and have it taken seriously.
It seems to me clearly that you could move at City Council for staff to come together with a proposal to seek out social service providers to put out a request for proposals on this issue formally, to announce that some funding was available for such a proposal, to buy Bob's Pine Grove Campground, to buy the property across from the River Street Mini Shelter, as I call it, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter as well. There's a piece of property that they're looking at that they think would be good as an indoor shelter, which I know you favor more than an outdoor shelter. I think it's one thing to send people to the state parks, and it's another to talk about your own beautiful city parks, of which there are plenty. It seems to me that, indeed you have to deal with the backlash in the city, but in a way, I think you're going to get less backlash in the city than you do from these weird right-wing Republican bigots around the state. And I think it shows less hypocrisy to say, well, we'll send all these homeless people out of town to the state parks rather than, send them to deal with them in our own city parks. I want to see you do something, Mike.
Robert, I think it would be fair to note that the state parks that we're talking about have campgrounds, have places that are set up with water facilities for people, picnic tables, areas where people can set up tents. None of our city parks are established in that way, and so it was not like we're just trying to send them someplace else. We pay state taxes, we pay county taxes, and the idea that we would have people in the state parks that are around us that are set up for campers was not an attempt just to send people, quote, someplace else, unquote, but attempt to send people where there's actually facilities available for them to camp. At this point, for people to camp in the Poganip, to camp in a place where there's no established place for safe fires, if people want to warm themselves or cook things, there's no picnic tables for people to eat on, there's rarely even sometimes level ground that people could sleep on that wouldn't be causing erosion problems. So there may be places in our parks where those kinds of things would work, but people need to make a concrete proposal about it. And what I'm saying is no different than what we say about all the other areas. There is a healthcare crisis in this country. I believe that most people in this country, the majority of people in this country, cannot get access to adequate health care. But I've never set out something like setting up an RFP, bring us your health programs. People know that we support those kinds of programs. They brought us particular programs, and we've ended up supporting them. And I think this council would, like councils before, it would support a program dealing with homeless issues if people put together one that works. We've done several homeless programs already. We do shelter homeless people here more than most cities do. And the idea of an additional emergency shelter of some kind would probably get support as well if it's well thought out.
Okay, this analogy about healthcare programs is, forgive me for saying so, bullshit, because people don't get arrested if they get sick. But if you fall asleep at night after 11 o'clock at night, you are a criminal under our city law. So don't tell me that there's an analogy between these two. There is not. No one's insisting that you would, if you made it a crime for people to be sick, then you bet your ass you should set up healthcare programs, or else you're criminalizing poor people. Similarly, if you make it a crime for people to sleep, your responsibility is to set up shelter programs to deal with that. That was the ruling of the federal judge in Miami. That's the conclusion of any sane person who looks at that kind of situation without the blinders of bigotry or the kind of a professional politician's perspective where which is what I hear from you, Mike. I think you have the facility to take action. You choose not to. More important than that, I think you intimidate the liberals on the council from doing what they, I think, could do. I don't like what Byers and Fitzmaurice did in this situation, and I think Crone and Sugar were chicken shit on the issue generally, even though they did, you know, they made a few amendments that I agreed with. They did not advocate in a way that I think would have, I think, turned the community around. I think there would have been a real vigorous, serious debate, but the basic question, okay, what are you going to do when you have no legal place for people to sleep and there are this many people around? You know, I mean, they're not going to disappear on you, or just sort of expect them to disappear, and if you do expect them to disappear, then why are you complaining about trollbusters? Because they're doing the job for you. So now you're saying, all these words, oh, you know, we're really concerned about these beatings, we all agree they're so bad, takes place against a background where it's criminal to be homeless after 11 o'clock at night and fall asleep. And, you know, I know you've given us this endless rap about, well, other cities do that, they just don't have a law about it. Well, whether you have a law about it or you don't have a law about it, it is a violation of basic human rights. At least that's the way a lot of people, not just myself, and I think you acknowledge that, Mike, in the community feel. So what I'm trying to do is find a way just to deal with the most vulnerable. I'm not saying set up, you know, Rolls-Royce shelters for everybody in town. I'm saying, how about opening up an area limited in scope, as Lou Rice proposed to you during your last conversation? If it passed that point, no. Then you shut it down. Okay, you're going to get problems from activists who are going to say, keep it open, and you're going to have that kind of activism. You're used to dealing with that. You've dealt with union struggles. You've dealt with discontented people. You know that that's part of the natural flow of politics, and probably a very positive sign in our community rather than a negative one. But at least you take some kind of action. And for you to keep falling back into this position of saying, well, bring me proposals, is, to me, a way of copping out. You know, I mean, if you really wanted proposals, you could get them. Are you claiming you couldn't?
Robert, obviously we disagree on this issue. The way I'm proposing we get proposals is the way we've done it with every other program that we have in the city, and I think it's the way you do it if you're serious about it. When you do RFPs, you waste a huge amount of time. That's RFP standing for request for a proposal, a formal process. You go through a whole process, you waste a lot of staff time, you put the proposal forward of what you're looking for, and then people come and complain, well, the way you've structured that request for proposals, we can't respond to it, and we don't really know, you know, it's not the right thing. The most open way to get the most proposals is to say to people, bring us a proposal. No limits to it. Tell us how it's going to work, you know, and answer general questions. And I put those questions out there in writing, in a number of different forums, and I've said them publicly over and over again, and I just, this evening, repeated them again, the fundamental ones that are kind of obvious on some level if you want to run a program around this level. And I think that's honestly the best way to get the most proposals. Why people haven't responded? Because I think for the most part, the people who actually care about putting programs together, who've either done it before or who sort of contemplate doing it, understand that this is a very, very difficult issue. That for example, when Catherine Byers and Celia Scott spent, I guess it was a year, you would know the exact...
6 months
looking for a place to do a shelter, and I believe they went out there with the best of intentions and really meant to find a place and thought, damn, this old council is just irresponsible and don't care enough about the issue. And they spent 6 months looking. They came back and they said, there's no place that we can see that possibly could work. They could be wrong.
The phone's ringing.
Okay, they could be wrong, but in fact, I think it's very difficult to find that place, and that's why I think people are not coming forward, not because they haven't heard that we would be willing to support some kind of a shelter if they had a good idea.
I want you to come forward. I think you can do it. Hang on, we got a phone call coming in.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz with Robert and Mike.
Hi, I've been listening to your show for about the last hour or so, and I was thinking that there's possibly a few things that need to be considered in regards to the... you know, so-called homeless problem. One thing that comes to my mind is that not all homeless people are in one class by themselves, you know. There are people that have been put out of their house because they lost their job. There's people with drug abuse problems and addictions. And thinking that maybe if you could establish some kind of classification for people that don't deal directly with, you know, like they need an address or something of that nature to receive any kind of aid, because I believe that there are people that have a housing crisis, and there's also people that really don't care about themselves and they drink themselves into oblivion and pass out. somewhere in a park.
Caller, the question I've always had is, if the city makes it illegal for people to sleep at night after 11 o'clock, and there are 500 to 1,500 homeless people in the city with essentially no shelter in the summer except for a very less than 5% of them, isn't this a basic human rights violation?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking about providing services in the sense that, you know, I'm not looking for Cadillac services. I'm looking for a way for people to decriminalize the activity of sleeping so that they can protect themselves. I mean, right now, homeless people can't even protect themselves. They can't sleep in groups. They can't sleep in areas that are well patrolled by the police. They can't report crimes to the police for fear of warrants, even though some police assure them it's okay. Others tell them otherwise. And there is general, I think Mike will agree with this, suspiciousness of the police around this whole issue. So my concern is, don't criminalize people in this situation.
Let me respond briefly to the comments you made. I think you make a good point generally. The city of Santa Cruz, and Robert might agree with this or might not, I won't put words in his mouth, but we do respond to a number of the concerns. The homeless are a very varied group, as you suggest. They have a lot of different reasons people are homeless. There are a lot of different needs that they have when they get homeless, and the things that would allow people to get back on their feet who are down and out really do vary. And the city, I would argue, better than most cities, if not all cities, does a pretty good job of that. We do provide people with a place they can list as a legal address. People vote. We had 132 people in the last election voting from Coral Street. Totally legal, totally reasonable way for them to record their rights as citizens, as anybody else, homeless or not. We do provide people with ways to get mail and other kinds of services. I won't go through a long litany or list of them, but on those kinds of issues of providing services, maybe even Robert would admit that the city of Santa Cruz does relatively well compared to other cities. His argument has to do with what happens to the people that are not so much in the need of services, but are more, but generally just want to be left alone, or have other kinds of responses to their needs. But I think the point you make is well taken, and the city does try and respond to at least the needs of many of the homeless people. I would go the next step and just make this last point about this. Many times there's kind of a trade-off in which cities decide, well, in order to sort of build public support for the kinds of programs that address perhaps the needs of the majority of the homeless people, the issue of letting people sleep around town and that will cause reactions and negative responses from people in town is maybe not a good idea. Robert probably disagrees with that, but my own sense is that when cities don't respond to the needs of what I believe is a majority view in town, that people shouldn't be allowed to sleep in neighborhoods. Robert, of course, has argued it's not neighborhoods he's talking about, but not be allowed to sleep in certain parts of the city, that basically, if we don't respond to those concerns of people, that you do build a backlash and people are less willing to support the social programs that address, I would argue, the needs of the vast majority of homeless people. I think the number of people, and Robert and I disagree about this, I think the number of homeless people in our community who feel that the right to sleep outdoors is their big issue is a very small percentage. There are people who feel that strong, there's no question. They come to city council meetings, they articulate it. I hear it in other forums as well. Robert articulates it for those people as well. But I think realistically, that's a very small percentage of the homeless. The vast majority of homeless people need other kinds of services, want to be involved in, for example, the Families in Transition program, are willing to be involved in programs that make requirements on them in terms of changing their lives, being willing to take job training, being willing to sort of get off of drugs or alcohol and so forth, or whatever it is. And again, all the people that want to sleep outdoors are not on drugs and alcohol. There's a range of different people with those needs. But just to sum it up, I think that in terms of the needs of the homeless, the percentage of people who think the right to sleep outdoors is the big issue for them, they are a small percentage of the homeless, in my view.
Well, I would suggest, Mike, walk to the Homeless Services Center and ask, take a vote in one of the meetings as to how many people consider harassment for sleeping a major problem for them this summer. And I think he may change his mind. I think, frankly, he knows better on this issue. This is a talking point he often uses. When you talk civil rights, Mike switches the issue to homeless services. I'm not talking about homeless services. I brought up the issue of the emergency sleeping zones because, frankly, I really would like to see Mike do something around this issue. I mean, I'm not just flapping my gums. We have an individual with considerable political power sitting in this studio who, frankly, I think if he decided he wanted it done, could get it done within a week or two or three. He's shaking his head there, but I don't think so. I think if Mike announced he wanted to open up a campground or a safe zone for the evening period of time, he would find lots of support for that program from social service providers, from other council members, from people in the community who backed ending or modifying the sleeping ban. Yes, he would also find some opposition, but I think that there would be a sufficiently strong amount of support to pass that through City Council very quickly, particularly given the current crisis. But that's just my opinion. I want to respond to what you said first. You made a number of points as usual. You run through 5 or 6 points. You're very, very good with your arguments, Mike, and I commend you. You've done it for years, and thank God I'm not in your position, because I feel that a lot of these arguments are this kind of after-the-fact rationalizations, which I find kind of sad, because your arguments affect real people. Your arguments hurt real people. Your position causes real people to go to jail and real people to get hurt. And that, unfortunately, is the reality in this situation. Just as Dan Hopkins accused you of having been responsible, along with Kennedy, for the death of I don't know how many people through closing the Coral Street open-air shelter, and I know you dismissed that as ridiculous or preposterous. He firmly believes that, and I don't believe that old Dan is a wingnut case. I believe he has some basis for believing that the politicians who did that bear the responsibility for the deaths that followed. Now, again, the issue that I really am trying to get through to you here, and I'm really trying to get you to grapple with, and I think, I don't know, you must have grappled with it sometime in the past. Obviously you have, and you made a decision on it, and I'm trying to expose the process of thought that goes into this, is that you cannot criminalize people for sleeping when they have no legal place to sleep. And we, you know, you dance around this one in a number of different ways by saying what wonderful social services we have, and if we let them sleep, we'd only have less social services. Of course, that's not the experience of Florida. It's the opposite. And again, you've presented no contrary evidence from any other communities that have shown social services cut back after homeless people were given, where sleeping bans were relaxed. And I can cite you 4 different places where that happened, and there is no stats that show that social services were cut back. In fact, as you know, they were expanded in Fort Lauderdale and in Miami. Now, you leap around to these irrelevant arguments, oh, they don't do it as much as we do. We are still criminalizing the overwhelming majority of homeless people who sleep at night. And the bad effect of this is that when you have troll busters out, it makes it very difficult for people to find safety. And as a consequence, they arm themselves. They have to engage in violent self-defense. I mean, I played an interview on the show you probably didn't hear with a man who, and Sherry Connable actually referred to him at City Council. She didn't tell the other half of the story. He was a street musician who was his sleeping bag was attacked. They beat his sleeping bag. He jumped down, and he lit into the troll busters with such ferocity that he feels he actually broke something in their body. And he said he was very determined that he thought that people were going to begin going after these people in groups. I think, you know, this kind of, you know, little class civil war is what we have when you have a whole situation where a class of people is criminalized and the city sits back and says things like, well, we're waiting for proposals, you know, or hey, we do the most per capita, or whatever they're saying, when in fact real violence is happening and real suffering is happening. So I'm looking for specific stats here. I guess, you know, I like to talk to you. I enjoy schmoozing with you on the air. You're an amiable man. You're a nice guy. You're a man who I've heard many good things about up at the university in terms of your willingness to help students do projects. It's just that, you know, I have to constantly come face to face, as does the community, with your behavior on City Council around basic civil rights issues for the homeless. And I've got a list of questions here which my producer has given me. I'm going to turn to them in a minute. I guess I should give you a chance to respond. I'll come down off my soapbox. I want to really start going at these issues one by one. I mean, you don't have to respond to any of this. This is my view of the situation, and I know you have a different view. I'd like to hear the audience responding and calling in. And do you support Mike's position? Do you think it's a good idea? You know, that we're doing what we can, and here's maybe the audience supporting you, Mike. You want to, let's see what they say.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, good. Well, it's Merlin.
Hi, Merlin.
Hey, first of all, I'd like to thank Mike for coming into the radio station, you know, and also for supporting us against the FCC.
Thanks,
Mike.
Thank you.
And listen, I'm against the sleeping, you know, the sleeping ban. I mean, if it was just legal for people to sleep, and we wouldn't have to worry about getting harassed by the cops, you know, I think a lot of local kids around here, I live in Capitola, but a lot of local kids, and it's not adults that are walking around. Adults aren't like people over 30 or 40 on the trail buster. That's usually people in their 20s that are trail busters. That's usually the description you hear when you read about it in the newspapers and stuff. And it's not like it's, but they're so pissed off about these goddamn hippies or, boy, I have to work for a living and they don't have to. As much as it is, I hear from young people community as a DJ on 96.3 that it's like, son of a bitch, you know, I grew up in this community and I can't afford a fucking house. You know, I can't afford to even pay rent here. I think the rent control, if we get rent control in Santa Cruz, that'd be a giant step towards mellowing people's, the young people out in Santa Cruz a little bit, but the locals, the natives. You know, the people that live here and that, you know, their mom and dad might have houses or have moved or something and they still live in town, can't afford a place, and they got to work their job and their girlfriend has to work her job just to keep a place. And, you know, that doesn't justify anybody going out and beating anybody. But, we just got a big police department. Man, that must have cost millions and millions of dollars.
$13 million.
Yeah, and how come the police department gets so much money? And I'm not even asking for money for the homeless, but we can't, I don't understand why we can't just make it legal for people to sleep without having to, I'm not saying get a shelter, why can't we just, you know, how can the city council can't just stick up for the human rights and just ban the sleeping ban?
Well, actually, the city council has already voted to declare that sleeping is a basic human right. Unfortunately, 3 months later, it also voted to make it a crime, or to reaffirm that it was a crime by passing the sleeping ban. Mike here, however, has been very patiently waiting to respond. Go ahead, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for calling in. I lost my thought here while I was waiting. First of all, I want to say I support rent control and have consistently. It's very difficult to pass it in this town for a whole series of reasons I won't go into now, since it's not the main topic in front of us. But I mean, I do think that makes a difference whether housing's affordable, rent control, and building more houses as well, affordable houses as well. But I think the real bottom line here is that the vast majority of people in this community don't support the right of people to sleep outdoors in the community any more than any other community in this country really does at this point. And I think there are certain ways that you can provide leadership. Council members or other public officials or individuals who are even unelected can provide leadership and try and change popular opinion. Robert thinks he has a way to do that or works on it. My sense is, for example, there was a time when most people in town didn't want any services for homeless people or any rights, and I think tacitly supported the police beating homeless people. I think we've done a lot of political work, and I've tried to play a role in that to turn that around. I think we have had some success there. I think there was a time when people supported, the next stage of that was when people supported the idea that people ought to have some place to sleep and there ought to be services, but not near their neighborhood or not where they were or something. And I actually worked to turn that around as well, and there was a number of actually five different projects at one time or another that I voted against virtually unanimous neighborhood opposition to approve, to actually construct existing shelters that do exist in our community, both private and public shelters. At this next stage, I think the issue is, how likely is it that you could persuade a majority of people in the community, because that's ultimately what you have to do in the kind of government that we've got here, that what you're going to do makes sense or that it's the right thing to do. And I think we just elected a number of new council members who I think came into office, I have to speak to them about it, but I think they came into office believing that maybe a majority of people supported doing something new, a new initiative and changes, perhaps significantly modifying the camping ban. Catherine Byers, when she got elected at her mayor speech, said, you know, she's going to, I don't know if she used the word revolution, but she's going to make a major change, you know, in the way that the camping ban worked. And then as a matter of fact, following that, they heard from the people in the community and something turned their minds around on this issue. And I think that the vast majority of people in town who are now, their views have changed, their will, I don't think they believe homeless people should be beat up. They don't think that homeless people should have no services or they should be driven out of town. Those views, I think, have gone away. But I still think that they believe that homeless people should not be allowed to sleep outdoors near their homes or near their businesses or in the public parks that they've supported. And whether they're right, whether they're ultimately right or wrong, I do think it takes organized effort, probably not just Robert coming for 3 minutes every other council meeting or every council meeting with his ideas, but people need to go knock on doors, as I had to do actually around this homeless issue in the earlier stages of it. And if you're going to turn people's minds around, you need to have an organizing project. It doesn't imagine this happens because you turn around four votes on the city council. You end up with people who have a sense of how this would work, where it would go, come to run for office with a particular program, and then you really do have a mandate, no matter what when other people call you up. And that's unfortunately not what's happened. We've had people run for office saying that they were going to get rid of the sleeping ban. They've all been defeated. The people who ran for office and openly said that they would like to do something about homelessness, don't then, when they get to actually implement a particular program, I'm trying to respond to Robert's earlier question as well about, like, what are the practical political realities here, they feel that, you know, that the whatever mandate they had was not clear enough, and when they get hundreds of phone calls, which we got around the idea of removing or even loosening the camping ban, they back down. And so what takes is a political organizing project at a much more grassroots level than something that happens in front of a city council from 7 to 7:30 on Tuesdays.
Mike?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Let me ask this one more time. Make it real simple for me, Mike. Why can't we just end the sleeping ban in simple, real terms?
Because Mike votes against it, that's why.
In simple real terms, because I don't believe that a majority of this community would support it. Even if the leaders of the community or others said, this is a good idea, we should do this. I think that people would resist it, as they did recently, when people proposed moving in that direction. That's an honest answer why I think it doesn't work.
Okay, listen, I have another small question, a little slight. I've listened to the whole conversation.
Marlon, before you do, let me comment on something here.
Okay.
If the leaders of the country had said that when blacks were demanding civil rights, that, well, you know, it might be okay, but, you know, I don't think a majority of the people in the community really support civil rights for black people. I mean, you know, having them in our neighborhoods makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and it's really something that we're going to have to, you know, go door to door, talk to other people about it, you know, organize, get people voting about it. You know, get that. It's not good enough to simply stand up and say that I'm the key vote blocking this at city council. If that kind of argument had been used, I mean, you know, you might have gotten a little ill hearing that from some, you know, middle-of-the-road politician who didn't have the guts to stand up on a civil rights issue. I'm afraid, and I don't want to say it's whether that Mike lacks courage, I think it is his, I'm not quite sure what the story is, I suspect it has to do with the sense of the political realities, as he puts it, but I also sense a lack of any commitment to believing that a person has a civil right to sleep at night, period. That, you know, I've never heard Mike say, I believe a human being has a right to sleep at night, and that it is a form of torture to say to them, you're going to be arrested if you sleep at night in the city, period.
It sounds like he said that, you know, there's a lot of people in the community that he's not sure that will support this.
Yeah, I'm not talking about a lot of the people in the community. I'm talking about him, you know.
There's a lot of people in the community that don't want the people to get arrested for sleeping. There's a lot of people.
That's correct.
There's a lot of people in the community
that think
that
sleeping is
okay, you know.
You know, we know that there are a number of very powerful people in the community who want to keep the law as it is. People with businesses, people who are well organized by the Downtown Association, and certain residents' associations as well. But to claim that that's somehow the majority sentiment of the community, when, if, for example, you look in the Sentinel, every time a poll, and they don't really do polls, they do this man on the street thing, it's 4 out of 5. No, it's hardly a poll, but it's 4 out of 5 people asked at random downtown, and they're not usually homeless people that are asked. Since 1982, I think, when I saw the first such poll, it's always been 75% say, get rid of this stupid law. And I think people recognize it is a special interest law by merchants and conservative residents who have somehow, you know, flamboozled the city council into believing that unless they continue this stuff, they're going to get, you know, that it's the best thing for them to do politically. And I think the same kinds of arguments were used in the 30s and 40s to stop blacks from getting any kind of suffrage and to stop blacks from getting basic rights in public accommodations. And it's just a wrong-headed argument. I mean, I think that's why students respond, for example, to it. When you talk to them about it, they recognize you've got to allow people to sleep at night.
Well,
somewhere.
I've heard things of, you know, black people in the community, and they say that there are still police officers in the Santa Cruz Police Force that don't like black people.
That's for sure.
And I get this from firsthand best friends I've known for over 27 years.
Well, that's what I heard last night at the WILP NAACP forum. I've heard that there's police abuse in this community that's racially oriented. And that, more important, that there is probably a series of kind of stereotyping goes on. That's another subject, though, Merlin. I'm trying to
pin down. Right. In Capitola, and, you know, the police force in Capitola hasn't exactly got a shining image itself.
Oh, Capitola.
Well, listen,
makes me win.
Mike, you were mentioning earlier on the radio show that if somebody brings to you certain issues or matters, and if you can find funding for them in some certain way, if you feel like it's a benefit to the community, well, Santa Cruz Free Radio is a benefit to the community. Is there any way we can get funding? Help?
As it turns out, I think it's not possible to fund things that are literally illegal, and so the problem is, on the one hand, being a pirate radio and then sort of looking for official government funding doesn't work out real well. So, whereas we passed a resolution trying to change, which I do support, and I supported, that the FCC should change its regulations to try and encourage this kind of radio programming, I don't think the city council can give money to a function that, even by the people who operate it, realize that it's an illegal activity under the stupid laws that exist at this point.
Merlin, I'm gonna catch up.
Okay, listen, you guys, thanks for talking to me. Mike, hey, you guys...
Thanks so much for calling.
Keep it simple.
Okay,
yes, sir.
Thanks.
Okay, so I'm going to take a couple of deep breaths, maybe give a little music, give you a chance to stretch your legs, Mike, and remind you that we have with us in the studio council member Mike Rodkin and, of course, the vicious Robert Norris going powder-puffing each other here. We're not really throwing any big punches here. We could bring in Dave LeFevre and see what happens, but you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's 96.3, and we do have an open phone line, so in case you want to join this... discussion, give us a call at 427-3772. That is after listening to this selection from our old pal Tom Lehrer. That's a song from the late 50s, or actually the mid-50s, by Tom Lehrer from his very first album. Tom is around here, but we just can't coax him down. We'll have to try to...
Which is a real shame. It's too bad, because he's great.
Tom is the man. Now, Mark Levy's a substitute, but...
He's good.
Mark's good as well. I got a call, Mike, while the song was playing from my producer saying that Chris Krohn, who was on the task force to examine the camping ordinance, Catherine Byers, by the way, never said she would make any changes in the camping ordinance. In fact, repeatedly throughout this process, she has said, when asked about it, well, she wants to lower the fine. And that's what she ended up doing, interestingly.
I may be wrong, but I believe the night that she, in her acceptance speech as mayor, she made clear that she was going to be bringing significant changes to the camping ban. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But that was certainly the impression that she gave that evening.
Examine the camping ordinance. Actually, it was Krohn who made most of the comments about, he gave a laundry list of things he was going to do. And I believe she talked about examining the camping ordinance. And that is, she didn't even really do that. We asked her.
You may be right. I don't know.
Yeah, we asked her to examine the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance, and that actually never really happened. We never did the kind of, you know, in-depth analysis. Have sleeping bans failed in other cities? Have they succeeded? Have they partially succeeded? Is our city the same or different than those cities? The kinds of questions you would think that would be asked. It was not a serious investigation. Instead, she had come to a decision, and she kind of dragged the other two members of the board along with her wherever she went because she was the mayor. However, one of those board members said, Christopher Crone, a task force member, Council Member Crone, was that he received, or that the council received, wasn't he or the council, I'm not sure, 225 communications regarding the camping ordinance, and only 75 of those asked that the camping ordinance either be strengthened. I guess there was no asking to be strengthened. There was asking that it be enforced more vigorously, I guess. That was, Harvey West did make that request, some of the residents out there. But only 75 of 225 actually favored keeping the camping ordinance as it was. And that includes the sleeping ban. And I presume that they were mainly talking about the sleeping ban, since I don't think people who wanted to change the law would go first for the camping part of the camping ordinance. They would rather talk about the sleeping ban. So I think I'd like to know where your stats come from that a majority of the community favors keeping this law the way it is.
Honestly, first of all, I don't know what those stats were. I didn't actually add them up or something, and I don't want to dispute them one way or the other. I wasn't on that task force, and so I'm drawing inferences from the conclusions that they seem to come to. But my information about what the majority of people in town think comes from having knocked on doors and done precincting work. I've been elected four times to public office. I've knocked on the doors of about 75% of the homes in Santa Cruz over the years. The last election that I ran in 96, I have to say that I was, and I tend to walk in the progressive to middle precincts in terms of views. I tend not to walk in the more conservative precincts. I figure I'm sort of wasting my time there. I once tried to test that. You know, maybe it was just a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy because I didn't walk in conservative precincts. I didn't get their votes. But when the time I tried it, my vote tally went down from what it was in 92 to 96. But generally, I walk in progressive to middle precincts in the city in terms of how people vote and in patterns. And I was met with a wave of concern that the homeless and often when you knock on doors you get all kinds of views, but people were saying the homeless and street people, and they tend to conflate those two groups or mix those two groups together, that those people need to be taught how to behave in public and that the homeless people are ruining our town and stuff like that. No, I didn't collect any formal stats, but it's overwhelming. I mean, I'll throw a number out. I mean, a low number. At least 80% of the people who come, first of all, over half the people whose doors I knocked on tended to comment on those issues, more about the downtown behavior issues than on the sleeping issue per se. And but both comments, and I would say easily 80% of the people who made comments tended to be more negative, which the city council would like be more forceful about enforcing its laws and making those people unquote behave and so forth. And so that's where I get my sense from this from. I also would say that the other source that I have for this is the calls that I got, you know, when people called us up about the proposals for changes in the camping ban affecting the sleeping portions of it. That, and again, this is not a poll. The people that called me, who decide to call me, may be from one particular point of view, but the vast majority of those people that called up wanted us not to change the camping ban, were horrified by it, and that we would change it, or that we would loosen it up, or that people would get to sleep. And again, their view was to sleep in their neighborhoods. The other source for this has to do with just, you know, when you talk to people in various kinds of groups about different issues, what do they talk to you about? So I could be wrong. The final thing I would say is there was an attempt to gather signatures to put this matter on the ballot. And in City of Santa Cruz, it's not that difficult, frankly, to go out and gather signatures and put stuff on the ballot. Whether you'll win the measure is a whole different issue. But in my experience, I've worked on a number of these in the past, and it wasn't that hard to raise the signatures. And the people that worked on this one, for whatever reason, were unsuccessful in gathering the signatures. And I do take that to mean something. It doesn't prove ultimately where everybody stands on the question, but it's an indication that this is not an issue where the vast majority of people, for example, think we ought to change it or are willing to do something about it.
Well, that I think is a claim I've heard you make before. And my experience getting signatures was not that a lot of people turned us away. In fact, almost everybody we approached The vast majority of people would signed up and were registered voters we approached, and there were a number who didn't. We had El Nino, we had 1,000 signatures lost at Earth Day, one of the main people got sick. I mean, there was a series of reasons, and I think that if you, what you're saying is true, that it's easy to get initiatives on the ballot, I think there would be considerably more of them than there are. I know that the recall initiative, for example, which had lots of conservative support back in 1989, failed to get on the ballot. And I recall is somewhat more difficult than an initiative, I think, probably. Right, right. What I'm saying, though, is I think you're actually getting an exactly opposite interpretation. My interpretation was that many, many people wanted this to happen, but that it wasn't very well organized. That was my interpretation. You know, and again, you're telling me, you know, I asked for your stats, and your stats were, how many, you're talking about your 96 campaign, and you estimate having knocked on how many doors?
In that particular campaign, about a third of the doors in the city.
It would be about,
20,000.
7,000?
7,000 or 8,000.
7,000 or 8,000 doors, and you said that 80% of those folks were...
About 50% of those folks commented on homeless or street people issues, and of those that
were negative about the, or wanted strong, or actually presumably they would be positive because I think you were viewed by the Sentinel as the strong man leading the city against the homeless forces of chaos.
Let me actually explain how that works. People, you know, it doesn't work that way. When I go out as a member of the government, you know, people perceive me as an incumbent, you know, a person running for office again or something. They hold me accountable for the way they see things going on in the city. And so it was not like, thank you, Mike, for holding the line against the homeless or anything like that. Quite the reverse. Why aren't you idiots down there at City Hall doing something about this outrageous situation where these people hang out on the mall and make our lives miserable, and why aren't you doing this or doing that and stuff? And so in my experience, it's not as if, I mean, how people are perceived may vary. It's not always, you don't always get an accurate interpretation of who you are or what you think about stuff. People in the community still, or whatever goes on, I think, have a tendency to see me as somebody who's from the left and for alternative kinds of stuff, and that's maybe true in some circles, not in others, but the reaction was against me, against the government. You guys aren't doing enough. Well, why should I vote for you? You guys aren't dealing with this problem. It's our town's not civil anymore, and it's outrageous. These people act badly, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, a lot of the comments were made of great ignorance and treating all the homeless as if they were alike, or as if every street person, most of whom probably are not homeless, but often kids who live in this town, were all homeless, or that the homeless community was responsible for these people who were begging for money to buy CDs, etc. So there's a great deal of ignorance out there. A lot of blaming people for things that are not their responsibility. And my sense of it was that, in terms of the feeling overall, people are not well disposed towards the homeless. I think that's a fair comment to make.
Well, we're not talking about your tally of pro and your tally of pro and anti-sleeping ban communications during the recent task force, you say, was overwhelmingly in favor of keeping the sleeping ban?
I was just talking about calls that came to my phone. I can't say.
How many calls did you estimate you got?
100 or something in that range.
About 100, and most of those favored keeping the existing ordinance?
Yeah, a vast majority of them. I don't know the exact number, 70-80%.
You know, I guess my response to that, again, is I have to go back to the basic civil rights issue, which I really don't ever hear you addressing. You know, I don't hear you dealing with that question of the question that Clyde Atkins struggled with, Judge Atkins, the question that Desmond Tutu supported us on, by the way, when the same issue came to Berkeley. The issue that Ramona Africa supported us on, which is really pretty transparent. You cannot arrest someone for sleeping if there is no legal place for them to go, unless there's some other crime being committed. And that seems so obvious, I think, to even your fourth grader. And I know that you may launch into a thing about, oh, well, the camping, there are all kinds of problems involved in camping, and it alienates people from the homeless. And okay, you're going to go directly to the human rights issue. Excellent.
I think one of the mistakes we often make in this country, and that we're perceived as being completely off the wall everywhere else in the world around it, is the notion that we have is the fight about abstract rights, the rights of the individual to do this or that, often at the expense of real social solutions to broad problems. You see that as a question of individual rights versus social programs, and you think individual rights are paramount, and to hell with it. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but relatively speaking, that the social programs and the social needs are not really the issue. It's the right of each individual to do what they want, or to sleep, or whatever the issues are.
It's a need. It's not
and the fact that, or a need, whatever you like to make it, but the point is...
Sleeping is the need? Come on, Mike, be real.
Can I finish my comment?
Sure, but
okay.
I mean, you're making these statements.
And the issue is, for me, that you can't separate these things, and the question of like how we respond to the crisis of homelessness is partly a rights issue. It's also an issue of practical questions of how you meet the majority of people's needs. And there are times, and this happens generally, where the United States finds itself in conflicts around the world because we say, for example, in relation to Cuba, we say, or maybe Cuba's not the best example, but in many places, gee, America's wonderful because here everybody has got these various kinds of rights, or most people have these different kinds of rights about different stuff. On the other hand, we have poverty. We don't address these issues. We're the last now, as South Africa has left us, the last country on the planet, industrialized country, developed country, that doesn't have a nationalized healthcare system, a socialized healthcare system. And they look at it, they say, well, what does it mean to talk about individual people's rights? Right, the right of free press, for example. Yeah, it's great to say we have the right to free speech, and as I'm sure you would note yourself, with the exception of little radio stations like this and some other things, our right to free speech doesn't mean much when, in fact, the information people get comes through multinational corporations that are run by, as it turns out now, you know, national television programs and news, not only controlled by large multinational corporations here, GE, for example, buying up NBC, but GE itself bought up by Bertelsmann AG, a German defense contractor that now owns one of our major networks. And so I don't think necessarily that the issue of rights taken by themselves are the most important question separated from the issue of how we try and solve problems. And we differ on that very clearly. I mean, your argument is rights come first and the other stuff... Deal with the rights first and then solve the problems if you can. And I want to try and address these things in a coherent way that looks at them both together. And where I see the battle over rights having a negative impact on other issues, I take it seriously. And I'll give you a concrete example. In San Francisco, a huge battle went on about people's right to sleep near the Civic Center in San Francisco. People have a right to sleep outdoors in the parks there and so forth. And they managed to deconstruct a coalition that had been successfully fighting for the preservation of these kind of residential hotels for low-income people in the neighborhoods around downtown San Francisco. And I think there's a real trade-off there. I think what happened is, in the fight for the right to people to sleep outdoor in the parks, they ended up alienating a lot of the different supporters that were there, and they end up losing battles over the preservation of real hotel space for very, very poor people, the people that become the homeless in San Francisco. And I would look at a situation like that, just as I do in our own city, and say, you can't address the rights issue separate from the question of what will build a successful movement to try and address the real needs of homeless people. And that's why I say, if in fact you're right, and there's a small number of homeless people whose primary need is to be able to sleep outdoors, and whose rights to do that, and whose rights to do that are being violated, it may be if in doing that you're meeting the needs of a much larger number of homeless people who actually need real services, healthcare services, food programs, a range of different programs we provide here. That's a trade-off that, to me, is a trade-off worth making. We disagree about that issue.
Well, again, I think it's sophistry to say that by somehow depriving people of the right to sleep, and that somehow there's some wild individual desire, and you often phrase it in those terms, to sleep anywhere and everywhere in the streets. And I want to commend you, by the way, for not using that formulation in this discussion.
Why did you bring it up?
Because you've used it so many times in the past, and I want to make sure that it doesn't happen again. I'm really pleased that you are not talking about that, because I think you're acknowledging. I think I see here, although you're not admitting it, and perhaps I'm wildly optimistic. Frankly, if you want to talk to the Coalition on Homelessness, who really has the inside track on the issue of that coalition, I think you'll find a much different view of what happened. It wasn't really the right to sleep in the Civic Center Plaza. It was the fact that there was such an inadequate shelter situation in San Francisco that encampment formed, both as a protest against that and also as a sort of a self-defense survival mechanism, where people slept with some relative sense of community and some relative sense of security. Obviously, it was not the best and the most ideal situation. And obviously, the media loved to smear it to death and to kick its ass down the road, and they did. And no question about it. But the issue is not one of individual rights to sleep or something, individual rights to do this and that. We have a need to sleep at night. And I guess one talks about the right to sleep because there are authorities like your city council authority that for to benefit the businesses and the tourists and the conservative residents passes laws that pander to those particular views. And you see this happening in city after city. Santa Cruz is not unique, although it actually started the trend in California. It was the first city to pass anti-sitting laws and anti-panhandling laws downtown and laws against because they didn't like Dave Jacobs and Robert Flory's protest around the sleeping ban issue, which was a relatively mild protest, lasted for 2 weeks, took a very small amount of space. But they responded to this huge amount of merchant outpouring of prejudice. You know, the idea that this can run the city in the face of and we're not just talking rights, Mike, we're talking the needs. One has a need to sleep at night. It is true. We know this. And therefore, you might say, well, you're best trying to meet that need by telling everybody to kind of hide and camp lightly on the land. I hear that phrase from you a lot. Camp lightly on the land. So, I mean, like, kind of disappear into the shadows and camp lightly. And the police are not going to bother you. They just bother the people in the high-profile areas. And I'm glad to say you haven't gone into that tonight either. You're making me lose all my normal arguments because you're not coming up with your usual responses, and I'm really pleased about that. But I see that you're looking at the clock, eager to respond to this. I'm going to give you a sure. What I wanted to provide also is an opportunity for people to get you to answer some of these questions in more detail, because some of them are factual questions. You've said you will seriously consider proposals put to you on this issue, and I don't put much stock in that. I've heard you say similar things before. I'm not saying you're insincere. I'm just saying what is that worth, you know? I under what circumstances will you go out and garner such proposals? If five people are beat, if one person dies, if five people die, what is going to be? I mean, I'm posing it hypothetically, but
yes, you are, and it's not a good question for me to answer because these kinds of hypotheticals don't lead to any real situations. I wanted to say one thing before we got off the air. It's really important. You had earlier made some comment about Dan Hopkins and that he disagreed with me about something, and then he made a comment, he's not a wingnut case, I think was your, to quote
yes,
you.
Sir.
I just want to be really clear. Everybody who disagrees with me, including Dan Hopkins, doesn't make somebody into a wingnut case to have a different view than I do about stuff. And I suggest you said that. No, okay. I just want to be clear because people might have misunderstood that and stuff. I have never characterized my opponents on the issue of the homeless sleeping ban or anything else as wingnuts or crazy or stupid or something else because we have different views. And I haven't. You go back and check it out. I would say I think they're wrong. I disagree with them and so forth.
And
as have you, and I hold my views strongly, and I don't mind voicing them so, but I don't tend to, like, characterize the people that disagree with me as nutty because they don't share my view, and people have every right to their view, and they have a right to express it, and I think I've been pretty consistent about this, and I don't think you'll find many circumstances where it's been otherwise. I do think there's a book, Randy Shaw has a book called The Activist Handbook that people might want to read, which is available in local bookstores, that read the second, I think it's the second chapter of that, where he talks about the San Francisco situation that I was describing, where I think the end result really was the loss of a bunch of residential hotels that made a much bigger difference to homeless people than whether they could or could not spend the night out in a number of parks around the Civic Center.
And I encourage you to talk to Paul Bowden, who was there on the scene as well, and other activists who are present to get the whole perspective.
Anyway, since you could probably get the last word, I do want to thank you for inviting me on the show and giving me a chance to share my views here.
Before you go, Mike, anything coming up at City Council that will be of interest to homeless and poor people in the next month that you want to bring up now, that you see coming up on the horizon, budget hearings? Where should people make their voices felt?
Yeah, first of all, just to point it, this should be pointed out, that the city has decided we're going to do a number of restrooms in downtown, which I think would serve the needs of not just homeless people, but the general public as well. We've established four sites downtown for porta-potties as at least a temporary solution to the problem, which I know Robert, among others, has been pushing for a long time. I think that is a done deal. It's just a question of implementing. And in terms of if people have other views about what the city should spend its money on or how we should carry out various kinds of activities, there are budget hearings taking place on the 14th and 15th of June. That's next Monday and Tuesday at the library upstairs. It starts at 9 and runs all day, and people have to figure out when they want to make their input. There are different, I don't know exactly what's on the agenda at what time, but they certainly could come at 9 o'clock on Monday and get the full agenda for what's being discussed. You know, there's a rough time frame of when we're going to get to different issues. And the final decisions on the Santa Cruz City budget will take place on the 13th of July in the evening. That's a Tuesday at 7 o'clock or 7:30, actually 7:30. And I would encourage people to come down there and share their views about what the budget priorities of the city should be, whether it's around homelessness or any other issue they're concerned about. And thanks again for inviting me on the show, Robert.
Sure. And Mike, thank you for showing up. And if you have any suggestions as to how to set up an emergency camping area, complete with budget analysis, who will run it, and so forth, give Mike a call at, what's your number, Mike?
420-5020.
Thank you, Mike. You've been listening to Councilmember Mike Rodkin and, of course, the inimitable Robert Norris on Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. We are going to actually get out in time and give an extra minute to that man who usually gives us his time, Uncle Dennis and Earth First. Come back next week, I should say, on Sunday at 11, and we will give you more of the same here.
Well, for some people, that's next week. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Mike. And you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I am Uncle Dennis, and we're going to get started here on Earth First Radio just as soon as I can figure out how to get a little bit more headset cord in here. All right, 96.3 Free Radio. We don't have no stinking license, and we the only thing we have is guts, because we've got no money either, right, Robert?
God, guts, and guns.
Well, anyway, well, let's get on with it here. Stand by. Studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, you're listening to Earth First Radio. Stay tuned for no compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
You're cutting chainsaws, killing the trees, something, everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run. When the job is done, how can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race. Oh, compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise. It's the bent of Mother Earth.
Welcome to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Every week I bring you no compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. In the news you'll hear about folks who are killing the planet and the folks who have detailed information about saving what's left. They all have names, addresses, phone numbers, fax numbers, email, and web addresses. So please get a pencil or a pen and some recycled paper to write down the information, because this is not, I repeat, this is not couch potato radio. It's activist radio, and I urge you to take the information down and act on it. You really can make a difference by writing letters, sending faxes, and making phone calls. When you aren't out in the woods, up in a tripod or a tree sit, or locked down at the road blockade. If you have information or announcements or comments for Earth First Radio, please keep a pencil handy and listen for the contact addresses later on in the show. And we're going to start out with some announcements, and we're going to hopefully get into some interesting stuff a little later on, but news and stuff. Anyway, here are the announcements. Catua Earth First is going to have their Summer Solstice Campout and Walk for Justice. That's occurring June 21st through June 27th at the Tellico Dam in East Tennessee. They're going to walk to Knoxville to protest the Tennessee Valley Authority's exploitation and genocide, nuclear weapons, waste production, stolen land, overpollution, desecration of indigenous cultures and rights, and Norman Zagrassi's frame-up of Leonard Peltier. They're going to rally at the TVA headquarters in Knoxville at the end of the walk on Sunday, June 27th. If you'd like more information about the Kitua Earth First Summer Solstice Campout and Walk for Justice, call JJ at 828-298-1251. That's JJ, 828-298-1251. They ask you to bring food, drinking water, flashlights, rain gear, a good attitude, and leave those guns, alcohols, drugs, and dogs at home. The Ford Foundation is going to be... Pardon my sneeze there. The Ford Foundation is going to be issuing some grants here in the near future. The project managers for these grants are the Aspen Institute for Rural Economic Policy Programs and the Pinchot Institute for Conservation. If you're an organization that needs some money and you're doing domestic community-based forestry projects, the Ford Foundation has some short-term development money for you. Phase one is designed to help grantees refine their strategic plan and or project concept prior to moving on to implementation. Up to $40,000 awards will be made. There will be 15 to 20 of those. Proposals are due by July 1st. If you'd like a copy of the RFP, it's available online at www.aspeninstitute.org/rural/. That's www.aspeninstitute.org/rural/. Or you could call the initiative managers at email address is forestry@aspeninstitute.org. And the phone number 202-736-3851. That's 202-736-3851. And coming up in September is the Forest Reform Rally, the Wild Utah Forest Campaign, a project of American Lands, will be co-hosting the 13th Annual Forest Reform Rally with the Forest Reform Network on September 10th through 12th, that is. Rally is north of Salt Lake City on the Wasatch Cache National Forest on the border of the High Uintas Wilderness Area. If you'd like further information and directions on how to get there, please mark your calendar for September 10th through 12th and contact Susan at 801-539-1355. That's 801-539-1355 or wufc@xmission.com. That's wufc@xmission.com. All right, also coming up here in the near future, June 21st through June 28th is the 19th Annual Round River Rendezvous. If you're in Earth First, you know what this is. We get together every year right around the 4th of July. In this case, it's the week before. And we hang out together. We have a fun party. We do all kinds of workshops. Even though you don't like work and you don't like shopping, you can still go to a workshop and just hang out with folks networking or doing whatever Earth First people do when they get together. Hopefully you'll wear a condom. Anyway, if you'd like more information about the Round River Rendezvous, which is going to take place on the southern border of Colorado, about 80 miles north of Santa Fe, New Mexico, here's a number to call. Let's see here. That's 520-620-1839. 520-620-1839, or you can write to the 1999 Round River Rendezvous at P.O. Box 3412, Tucson, Arizona, 85722. That's Round River Rendezvous 99, P.O. Box 3412, Tucson, Arizona, 85722. And speaking about action, the situation is escalating in Albion, California. The Save the Redwoods Boycott the Gap campaign is telling folks about the Fisher Family's Logging Company, known as the Mendocino Redwood Company. It's they're the folks